Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We've got the new hood on the car out there. We are driving it. We are not driving it down to Tampa. It is the 20th anniversary of Super Bowl 35. If I'm not mistaken, Gary Myers probably stopped by my sporting news set. Gary, I've been digging out pictures from 20 years ago this week. I mean, I like David Copperfield stopping by the show when I was syndicated, and I've been holding all the pictures. You know, I got Billick holding this trophy and David Modell marching the trophy right where the Mayflowers were. So we're having a good time here, but my goodness, you've written about the Tom Brady story, the Peyton Manning family, the Eli Manning family. You've covered football in New York. I mean, I remember watching you on the HBO thing when I was a little boy, Gary. I know you don't want me to say that to you, but the Brady thing, this is a story that keeps giving, right? I mean, he's never going away, is he?
You were a little boy?
Yes, I was. I think I was 15, 14, 16. When did you start at HBO? 80-something, right?
1989.
All right, I was 21. All right, So I felt like I was younger. I'll tell Peter King I've known him longer. How about that?
Yeah, I was on that show until 2001. And just if I can mention, so in addition to the Brady Manning book that you can see in the background, I've been doing a Brady podcast all season. It's called The Goat Tom Brady, and you can get it on Apple or iHeart or any of those podcast wherever you get podcasts. And it's kind of based somewhat on my book, but it's really just Brady-centric. I do have a bunch of stuff about Peyton in there, but it really follows Tom's journey from high school until he signed with the Bucks. And then I'm actually taping this week my fifth bonus episode, which they're done more in real time about what's been happening this season. And so in this week's episode, I'm going to have on Tom Brady Sr., and to talk about, you know, his son, obviously, which is, he's just terrific talking about Tom. He's much more forthcoming about Tom than Tom is himself. And then also have Dan Shaughnessy from the Boston Globe talking about the reaction in Boston and New England to Tom getting to the Super Bowl.
Another former great Baltimore writer. We were former colleagues at the Baltimore Evening Sun. So every time Shaughnessy comes around, we're telling old Earl Weaver stories and stuff like that.
There you go.
Gary, you've been at this forever. I mean, whether it's like writing about Montana and the catch or writing about the Cowboys, it would seem to me that from an industry standpoint, for any of you who write books about all of this, and I know all of you and the Hall of Fame writers and all of that, that Brady is his own institution in the way that Michael Jordan would have been, or the way like Ali was for so many of my friends back in the 60s and 70s that I befriended, as the Bert Sugar types and Alan Goldstein and Jerry Eisenberg, the people that write those kind of stories. But we are literally, we thought we were at the end of it. Every year, I think I started seeing you in Super Bowls like 2008, 9, thinking, well, it's been 10 years. We got to be getting to the end of this. I mean, 35, he'll be done. Then he started talking 45 and eating avocado ice cream. To be in the middle of this and to be the chronicler of this and to have this cat continue to come back in a different jersey, in a different city, all of that, the story gets richer, even if some of us, look, man, he's beaten my team too many times. I'm a little, I want to hear more about Mahomes than I do about Brady at this point. But if you're into Brady, this is one of the greatest stories ever told, I would think, for modern sport, and it keeps evolving.
Well, when you think about Nestor, that he's been in the league for 21 years. And if you don't count his rookie season in 2000 when he threw only three passes, and then if you discount 2008 when he tore his ACL in the first quarter of the first game. So he's basically played 19 seasons. This is his 19th season, if you take away those two. And he's been to 10 Super Bowls. So he's been to the Super Bowl. I mean, I know you're not great in math, but 10 is just a little bit more than 50% of 19. So he's been in the Super Bowl basically one out of every 2 years that he's played. And next on the list among quarterbacks is John Elway, who got to five. And he only won, not only, but he won two, which is great.
I'm not going to bring up his Baltimore connection. We're going to forget about that.
No, I understand that. And I just want to tell you this. John Elway did not reject the Colts because of the city of Baltimore. It had nothing to do with Baltimore. Although at the time, he might have said he wanted to play closer to home or you know,
he said he wanted to play baseball in Oneonta, for crying out loud.
I know it had to do with Frank Cush. He did not want to play for Frank Cush, and that was from what I've been told over the years, that was the primary reason. So if people in Baltimore still have hard feelings about John Elway, it's understood, but just also know that it wasn't the city he was rejecting. I think his dad, you know, who was a college coach, was steering him away from Frank Cush. So it came down.
Well, and I would think Irsay and the stability of the organization, yeah, and how much Bob was drinking before lunchtime and all that. But Gary, I was working on a book on Baltimore coaching about 13 years ago. Frank Cush was still alive. And I flew out to Sun Devil Stadium. Yeah, I was out there for the owners' meetings and spring training. Probably saw you at the pool at the Biltmore. And I went up to the roof and sat with Frank Cush. The video's up on YouTube, and I'll never forget. He's in his 80s, but he still looked like he could kick everybody's ass, quite frankly. And he said, "They got to fear you. They got to fear you. The players got to fear you." And I'm thinking, my God, this is 2008. And I'm thinking, man, did that work in 1978? You know, I guess maybe it did. I'm not sure. Gary Myers is here. He writes books about Tom Brady. I guess there'll be another chapter to the chapter to the addendum to the chapter. How many books on Brady have you written now?
No, it's just basically just one, just the Brady versus Manning book.
Well, there's got to be another book. There's got to be a whole Brady book coming, right?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I haven't really thought about it at this point because, the story that's going on now, maybe because if he wins the Super Bowl, there's another Brady book in me somewhere. But up until this point, you know, the last couple of weeks, this story has just been building momentum. When they were 7-5 going into their break right around December 1st, I don't think anybody was thinking, you know, this was a season that was going to end with the Bucs being the first team to host the Super Bowl. And then they just got red hot after the break because I think during the bye week, they decided, okay, this is working and this is not, because the combination of Brady's offense and Bruce Arians' offense for the first 12 weeks of the season, it was just really like a mishmash. You know, they didn't know what they were good at. And so that week off, I think they had a really good chance to self-scout. And, you know, since then, you know, now the four teams they beat come down the stretch of the season was just, you know, Atlanta, Detroit, Carolina, and Atlanta again. You know, nobody was really getting excited about that because, you know, that wasn't – I mean, that got them going somewhat, but it wasn't like a murderer's row there. And then they beat Washington in the wild card round. And, you know, Washington barely made the playoffs, had a sub-500 record. But when you think about, they beat Drew Brees, they just beat Aaron Rodgers, and if they win the Super Bowl, they would have beaten Patrick Mahomes. So Brees, Rodgers, and Mahomes in a row, that's really, really impressive. And I'm not saying, you know, they're going to beat Kansas City. I'm not discounting their chances of beating them whatsoever. They just got to figure out a way to cover Tyreek Hill, who, if you remember that game from November, had over 200 yards in the first quarter against them. So I think this could be a really competitive game. It's a shame that we finally reached a point where a team is playing the Super Bowl on its home field and there's only going to be 22,000 fans in the stadium.
Are you going?
No, I am not going.
I'm not going. When's the last time you missed the Super Bowl? Mine was 94.
The last, I go way back before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've never missed a Super Bowl, I'm thinking, it since you started, right?
Right. The first one I went to was Joe Montana's first Super Bowl in Detroit. It actually in Pontiac, Michigan. Against
Snow Day, yeah.
Cincinnati. And that was after the 81 season. So that's I've gone to the Super Bowl the last couple of years. I haven't gone to the game. Once I left the Daily News, I just had a lot of business to do down there during the week, but I haven't stayed for the game. But I think I was up to attending 37 games in a row. And then I've been to the last two Super Bowls, but again, I've left before the game. So this is the first time since the 1980 season that I won't be either at the game or just at the Super Bowl site leading up to it.
Well, I don't get to sit and talk to, I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do next week. It's the first like radio row I'm not there. And I mean, Luke and I aren't hanging out and eating food and meeting people and having to talk to Hall of Famers and all that. But the game itself and the interesting part for me, And look, the Buccaneers during the stretch, I mean, I wasn't watching them play, to your point. I mean, the Ravens schedule stunk in December. We had our own issues trying to get into the playoffs. And then, you know, Ryan Jensen and I are friends, and I know there was some shuffling on the offensive line that you talked about, that they were unsure what they were doing, and AQ Shipley and other Ravens guys shuttling in down there. The amount of imports, right, whether it's Antonio Brown, whether it's Brady himself, whether it's Gronkowski, whether it's Ndamukong Suh running around there, boy, Bruce Arians did a recruiting job down there, right? Like, and better weather. And Lawrence Taylor always said they should be able to recruit better in Florida because people want to play down there. The weather's better. It's better than playing in Green Bay in the middle of December. For Tom Brady to make that decision, run me through that a little bit in his mind, because I think there were a lot of places he could have gone. I think folks said, it's nice Tom's going to go down there. He'll win 8 or 9 games, and they'll take a facer in the first round, because how are they going to win in Tampa? And here they are with, you know, I think a legitimate chance to win. I mean, I think the Chiefs will win, but it's Tom Brady in February in a Super Bowl for 4 quarters. I'm not going to take anything away, but bringing in veteran players into Tampa and the recruitment of players, it certainly has worked out well from the 30-plus range, right?
Yeah, I think that, well, first of all, there were a number of reasons that Tom wanted to leave New England. I think he was tired of Belichick. He looked around at his wide receivers and he was wondering, just like in 2019, who he was going to throw the ball to. You know, they're skill position players. You know, it might have been the worst in the league. And, you know, he never was paid fair market value there. And he did that willingly so that they can use the money on the rest of the team. And I think he just reached the point where he said enough is enough. And Belichick didn't make much of an effort to sign him. And so, okay, so why did he go to Tampa? I think he could have potentially gone to the Chargers, maybe the Raiders. And there could have been a couple other teams in there that whose names never really came out. But I think when he evaluated the situation, and I know he talked to Peyton about Bruce Arians, because Peyton had a positive experience with Arians in Indianapolis. So he did the research there. He looked at the roster and he saw Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Cameron Brate and O.J. Howard, who has since gotten hurt, Ronald Jones and a decent offensive line. He said, I can operate here. I can score some points here. And then, you know, after 5 years at Michigan and 20 years in New England, I think he was pretty tired of the winter. And I know as I've gotten older that a break in Florida, you know.
Dude, I get to 5 days in Tampa next week would feel good. You and me, right? Like, literally.
No. So he rented Derek Jeter's house right on the water. And I think he's bought a house at some point during the season. I'm not sure if he's moved into it yet. That's also on the water. And, you know, it's a lot nicer getting up in December in Florida and putting on a pair of shorts or just a sweatshirt than, as you know, being in Baltimore and me in New York and what it's like in Boston and Ann Arbor. You know, you got to bundle up with a heavy, you know, put a sweater on and a jacket and a hat and the gloves. I mean, this is much more, you know, I think it was much more conducive to how he wanted to live his life on a day-to-day basis. So all the pieces added up. And
just the fact that he wants to play football, right, Gary? I mean, like at 43, that he wants to go, you know, venture out, do something he's never done, literally pick a place. Peyton did it at the end, right? It worked out well. So, I mean, maybe part of that script was there for him, and probably what Philip Rivers was chasing in Indianapolis this year, what Johnny U was chasing in San Diego 40 years ago, right?
Yeah. And I think Peyton would have stayed in Indianapolis if he hadn't gotten hurt. Remember, he had missed the 2011 season after his fourth neck surgery. And then all the pieces fell into place for the Colts to say, you know, at your money, your age, coming off the surgery, and Andrew Luck is sitting there as the first pick in the draft. If Luck wasn't there and it was not a year where they were going to get a potential franchise quarterback, I think they would have tried to make it work with Peyton and Indy. And I'm certain at that point he wanted to stay in Indianapolis, all things being equal, that they wanted him. But, yeah, he had a lot of choices. He could have gone to San Francisco, I know, was really interested. Arizona was really interested. Tennessee very much wanted him. And so he went on a recruiting trip, you know, much like he did when he was picking a college to go to. I don't know that Tom had as many choices as Peyton did for a variety of reasons. But the fact that Tampa was one of the choices that he had, and it was one of the teams that he had really zeroed in on, I think it made it a pretty easy decision for him. Plus, don't discount the proximity to New York, where he does a lot of business and his wife does a lot of business. And he's had an apartment over the years. I think having that base of operations also in New York and not being that far away from there, I think that was attractive rather than going back out to California, which is where he's from. And it could not have worked out better for him to this point. I know if they lose the Super Bowl, he's going to be devastated, because he's devastated when they lose a game in October. So getting this far and not being able to finish it off, I think will be crushing for him. But at the same time, when he has a chance to look back at what he accomplished this year, I think he'll be pretty proud of it. And win or lose in the Super Bowl, I think he will be back next year.
Sure. Gary Myers joining us here. You can find him out on Twitter. You can find his books. And, of course, the Brady versus Manning book. You can find him at Gary Myers NY for New York. And he's doing his GOAT podcast with Tom Brady. Big question, man, because I'm a room raider around here. You know, I got my leg lamp here and whatnot. The orange seat, where's that one from? Is that Shea Stadium or something?
Shea Stadium. From?
Ah, see, that was pretty good. That's because I sat in those seats. I remember.
Yeah, I'm a huge Mets fan, and that's why I never covered baseball, because I'm such a big baseball fan. And my son bought that for me as a present online when they were selling parts of Shea Stadium piece by piece after it was knocked down. And yes, that's one of my.
I got Madden's book here on Seaver. I was supposed to have him on last month, so you know I got one Tom Seaver story. I sat between him and Jim Palmer in the media lounge, and just listened to them talk, and I was like this. That's the only Tom Seaver story I got. But you know, my dad hated the Mets because of '69. So
yeah,
you know,
of course.
It's you know part of the thing. But you had your fun back in '86. You had a good time. You got to beat the Boston people up for 20 years too. So.
Yeah, the 69 World Series and the 69 Mets is my all-time favorite team out of anything. And I was a teenager then, and I remember everything about the 69 season. I went to Game 4 of the World Series when Ron Sobota made that great catch.
Baltimore guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, yep, absolutely.
He was not a great outfielder, but he made an amazing catch that pretty much saved the game from the Mets. Won. That was the ninth inning. The Mets.
They never let him back into Sparrow's Point after that. He was Gary, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on. And maybe one day we'll sit out in the outfield at the Citi Field and have a cheesesteak and eat some French fries or something, watch a Mets game again. I don't know the next time I'm going to a ball game. I hope you stay safe out there, get the shot, do all that good stuff. And I'm sorry we're not getting together in Tampa, but I appreciate you making some time and telling some Tom Brady stories. It's all coming back again. Tom Brady will always be in style, yeah. Right?
Well, I always appreciate you having me on, Nestor, and it's always fun talking to you as well.
And I'm sorry I said I was a boy, but I was barely of legal drinking age when I saw you on television. Gary, take care, buddy.
Take care. Thank you.
Gary Myers came into my world, HBO, in 1989 with Nick Bonacani and Len Dawson and all those guys. See, man, I'm old school like that. It's great to have Gary around. Go check out his book, Brady versus Manning. It's Brady versus Mahomes. We're not in Tampa next week. Luke will be covering all things Ravens and Orioles and getting us back where we need to be. I will be moving on talking to Harford County Executive Barry Glassman. We have the mayor of Baltimore, Brandon Scott, this week as well, and telling some great stories of Ron Cassey about Little Italy and the insurrection at the Capitol. I am Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, celebrating 20 years of Super Bowl 35 with all the champs this week.